League of Ireland Late Night in partnership with Rocksure on Off the Ball.
Well, if Daniel Kelly won that header, you clip that and you save that in the Shelbourne folklore.
League of Ireland Late Night, live every Friday from 10 on Twitter Spaces.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Orthopaedic Care. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Good evening. Welcome along to Wednesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Wednesday night rugby is coming up from 7:30. And Mike Sherry is going to analyse Munster's prospects of causing an upset in South Africa this weekend, and then maybe an upset in South Africa the following weekend, and then maybe an upset in Croke Park the weekend after that as they go and beat Leinster to win the URC. I'm dreaming. Munster fans are dreaming going into this knockout run. We're going to have basketball from 8 o'clock. Harvey Arrington, New York-based writer who's worked at the New York Times for a few decades, is going to join us to talk about the Pacers-Knicks series, which is currently ongoing. Pacers have the upper hand there, 3-1 up after last night. And then after 9 o'clock, Nathan is going to join us for the football show to deliver his review of the Irish players in the Premier League season just gone. And we'd also speak to Daniele Fisichella to chat about Napoli winning their fourth ever Scudetto last Friday. And we'll obviously be talking about Inter Milan as well before this weekend's Champions League final. Our number on WhatsApp is 0879 180 180 if you want to get in touch. Oisín Coyne will be delivering the news round very shortly. Oisín, how are you doing?
Evening, gents. Doing very well.
Mick McCarthy is here. How are you, Mick?
Oh, great, Owen, as you know.
James Lowe has delivered some relatable content this week. He was talking about not watching the Champions Cup final at the weekend. He said, I just didn't want to watch the game. It's not that I don't respect the two games. It just sucks because I wanted to be there. Now, it's not overly relatable that, you know, we've been athletes playing in a semi-final.
Underly relatable, I would say, yeah.
But I get the theme that he's going for there, the pain, that you can't just feast your eyes on something that you don't want to, especially sporting-wise. Like, maybe that's a little easier to do because you've got no part to play in that standalone fixture whatsoever. But I'm sure there's plenty of sports fans out there who think of their worst moments as sports fans and then just cannot bear to see the sight of the game whenever it appears on reruns.
Yeah. Do you have one?
The 2011 All-Ireland Final. Whenever that comes up, whenever Cluxton's kick to win that All-Ireland Final comes up, I turn that particular piece of content off.
I'd skirt away
from that.
I'd be very similar to you on that. I very rarely watch back defeats to any team that I care about. Or even analysis around it or anything. I find myself now that, and I don't know, I used to hoover it up a little bit more, but I find myself in the last couple of years, I want to march out of a stadium, or I'll want, not necessarily before the full-time whistle on. Don't go down that road.
That kind of worms is ready to be open.
You just kind of get out and just be done with it. Like, I certainly will turn off post-match. You know, like when, like, we'll absolutely turn off the post. I did not watch the post-match from Old Trafford last Sunday, for example. So 100% we'll just try and avoid it. I think his one is a little bit different. It's like the consequence match, the game, the final. You lose the semi-final, what's happening in the final is an interesting one as well, because I can kind of think of examples on both sides. I feel like, you know, like Clare lost obviously those two semi-finals in a row to Kilkenny.
But you're still watching the All-Ireland final.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I was a lot, the first All-Ireland final, because Clare were absolutely hammered, and you know, it was that amazing game where Gareth Hegarty got that incredible goal where he ran through the converging defenders and so on. Like, very, very interesting that game. Now, the next one I actually went to because I got a last minute ticket or whatever, and Clare had lost in heartbreaking fashion 2 weeks before. Very, very different. And I felt a lot less, it took a long time, but it took Limerick's insane second half comeback where they, you know, won the second half by 162 points for me to kind of gain interest as a neutral again, to me to accept it for what it was, you know. So it was, I don't know, I find that hard to answer actually, because it is an interesting point.
What are you not watching, Oisín? What are you turning off if it comes on your feed?
Mine's a really funny one because I wasn't actually even alive for it, but my family have completely implemented it into me. The 1998 All-Ireland Football Final, Kildare losing to Galway, lads, the torture I've had listening to family members over the years, what we were to what we are now.
That's generational trauma.
I know, yeah, and it's been, obviously with Mikko this year, it's been popping up everywhere, and I'm like, just don't show us that clip.
Have you ever watched The Year Till Sunday?
No.
Right. Great documentary, not for you, but in general.
The rest of us love it.
That's so interesting. I mean, have I ever mustered the courage to watch the 1982 All-Ireland football final back? And can't say I have. You know, that is an important thing. Like, the family nature to it all, like, it is the stuff of legend, you know, the hand-me-down nature of this is a bad thing that happened to our county and thereby it's a thing that we can't possibly confront.
Ciara, it's funny when you mention that's obviously a very famous All-Ireland final, 1982, probably the most famous All-Ireland final. There's also, when famous moments, so Kieran Carey's point against Clare in 96, you know, and I've had to revisit that for work a lot of times, like loads of times over the years, and that's really painful because that was one where, you know, Clare felt like, you know, it was one and you're out, knockout hurling, first round, packed Gaelic grounds, like, you know, steam coming off the crowd and robbed at the death in a way that, like, you know, there's a sense of could have built a dynasty, could have won four All-Irelands in a row, that team. Not saying they would have, but they could have. Mm-hmm. And it was just gone in that moment, you know? So, yeah, tough to think about. Even when it's a famous moment, it's very hard to avoid.
Yeah.
Like, you've seen Tommy Doyle get pushed in the back about 400 times over your lifetime, I would say, have you?
But that's it. Yeah, it's posters in my crime scene room. It's interesting. Like, there are different degrees to it all. Like, when it comes to, like, not watching a different game, like the consequential game, like, it is hard to not put yourself into a moment when it is a semi-final in particular. Like, watching, like, your team lose a semi and then watching the next round is difficult. It all depends on the context.
I didn't have much interest in the Conference League final last year. Does that count? No, probably not.
dare I open the leaving games early kind of worms?
Go on, sure. That you're losing. We have differing opinions on it, don't we?
But I think your opinion on it has also changed a little bit, has it? You've started to accept that you can leave a game early.
Yeah, no, I've never been mad against it. My thing on it is like, I don't like leaving at halftime. I don't like giving up on your team. But I think when a game is over, I think it's absolutely no harm to not... See, the way I look at it, and I think there is a kind of a... It's a set thing of, like, you support your team to the end. And I feel like that's the good guy part of the story. And the bad guy side is never told, right? That there is a kind of a leaving for traffic and all of that stuff. That's one part of it. But the other part is actually, like, I don't want to be sitting here in this pain anymore. Like, it is painful. It's over. So therefore, I have the opportunity to leave. It's over. Like, I watch sports sometimes and wonder how players don't walk off the pitch. I swear to God, I honestly do. I watch it like on Sunday or whatever, when everything has gone completely wrong for Villa and they've thrown it away.
Yeah.
And it's been taken from them. Whatever, both are true. Some will have perspectives on one or the other. I watch it and I'm honestly thinking to myself, like, how are they? How is Emery just not going to, like, shag off up the up the corridor and instead of sitting here watching this?
Have you considered just walking out when a day isn't going well at work?
give him 10 minutes only. He could be out tonight.
Give him 10 minutes ago.
Nick is just back in the building as of 5 minutes ago.
No, that's a very fair point. Obviously that would never even enter your head.
But it is
their job. Yeah.
Have you seen some of the clips?
We're more emotional than they are.
Do you remember Vincent Kompany scored that goal, the Man City the title, but a few years ago against Leicester, and you see the woman walking up the turnstiles as well while it's going for the top corner. Like, it does make for some good moments when you see the crowd exit in the background.
I told Owen about this before. I had an amazing moment. I think it was maybe the second, we'd been to hurling games before, but I think it was maybe the second Clare game my now wife had been in. It was a first round Munster Championship game against Waterford in 2016, and we're in the stand in Thurles where you have to walk down to the pitch basically to walk out. And Waterford had got what I thought was the ceiling score just before, and was like, right, we're going. Left her kind of behind. She didn't realise I was leaving. And as I'm walking down the steps, Maurice Shanahan gets this insanely good point, which to the rest of the crowd was the ceiling score, under the stand, straight over the bar, turns around, gives it all that rah, to the crowd. And as he's looking directly into my eye, like 4 yards away from standing on the ground. And it's just this image that will live with me for the rest of my life.
I mean, that's like, I think that's exactly what you deserved in that situation, to be fair.
Fair enough.
Staunch,
yeah. I'm the bad guy.
Leaving early, but yeah, let us know. 0879 180 180 is our number. The news round tonight is with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. You're going to start with Gaelic games this evening, Oisín.
Yeah, obviously Eoghan Lough taking on Tyrone in the All-Ireland Under-20 football decider this evening. The Wee County aiming to win a first ever Under-20 title tonight, the All-Ireland title, and while Tyrone are aiming to win back-to-back underage All-Irelands for the first time in 24 years. Former Tyrone star Colm Kavanagh has been speaking before the game, and he says the hard work in the background is finally paying off for Tyrone.
You know, for years we've just the guys have got the systems and the right people there. And look, we're a big county. We've a big pick, and thankfully that's translating onto the pitches, and they're able to now in back to back All Ireland finals. So it's fantastic for the lads, and it sets up a real platform, I suppose, for the future. So yeah, great, good times.
And throws in at the Athletic Grounds in Armagh very shortly at about 7:30 on.
Yeah, Louth obviously. Big outsiders for that game. Half down to pedigree, you'd have to say, with this Tyrone team and a couple of the players that have been there from last year as well, and a very, very impressive team going for back-to-back. And then half of it is down to what Tyrone have shown this year as well. They look just as impressive as they were last year, but still, what a year it's been so far for Louth, and you wouldn't write them out of this tonight either. We were chatting to JP Rooney about this yesterday, and he definitely pointed to a few areas where they can possibly hurt Tyrone. So 7:30 throw-in there. We have an update on integration.
Yeah, the three bodies that oversee Gaelic games have established a central fixtures oversight committee. The Camogie Association, GAA and LGFA see it as a significant step towards full integration. The committee is looking at a long-term vision for fixtures in one association and developing protocol around facilities for all codes, I should say. The steering group on integration has also started its goal to have one single membership for all associations in 2027.
Will Mick McCarthy be watching this year's Conference League final?
You're interested at this time, Mick?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, yeah, yeah. Anthony versus Sancho, you know.
That's it. That is your next story, Conference League?
Yeah, obviously Chelsea looking to complete a unique treble of European football tonight. Having lifted the Champions League and Europa League in the past, the Blues will attempt to add the Conference League crown to their list of honours. Chelsea boss Enzo Maresca says he wants his players to prove they have a winning mentality. They already know they'll be playing in Europe's top competition next year, the Champions League, regardless of tonight's result. But Maresca says he has found it tough to get his players to understand the importance of this competition throughout the season.
The most complicated thing this season about the conference has been to convince the player that for us was the best competition in the world. And the reason why was because it's the competition that we were in. So every game has been difficult, especially because I needed to convince the player that we were not able to drop nothing, because you can lose points against any team. And we need to respect any team in Europe and any team that we face. And then I'm not focused about winning this competition or with this trophy because my name. For sure, I'm happy if we win, but I'm especially happy for the club, for the fans, and as you said, also because Chelsea can become the first club in Europe to win all the European competition.
That's Enzo Maresca there. So kickoff in Poland in tonight's Europa Conference League final is at 8 o'clock. Bit of transfer news for you now, lads. Real Sociedad midfielder Martin Zubimendi is set to undergo a medical ahead of a move to Arsenal. BBC Sport is reporting that the deal is entering the closing stages. With all relevant documents signed, the 26-year-old defensive midfielder's release clause is €60 million. Spanish international has played 180 La Liga matches with the Basque club. And I suppose a bit of Irish news then. Preston North End winger Robbie Brady has signed a new one-year deal. The 33-year-old Republic of Ireland international, who plays at left wing-back for the club, has made 100 appearances for the Championship side since joining in July 2022. It also comes on a day where Brady was nominated for the Senior Men's International Player of the Year alongside Nathan Collins and Caoimhín Kelleher.
So a couple of things to go back to there. You're excited for Anthony versus Jadon Sancho. Sancho's on the bench.
I know.
Evening for Chelsea.
Chelsea's run of European Cups, I know it's the Conference League is like 3 years old, so it's like, whoop do you. They also were the last winners of the Cup Winners' Cup. Mm. They're going to have a fairly interesting European pedigree, don't they, Chelsea?
Yeah, they do.
I think there's a weird issue with Chelsea where I think people sometimes just like, they don't get kind of credit for their kind of consistent level of success that's going on 20 years now. Or even longer in some ways in terms of being relevant.
What do you mean credit? Like, I mean, first of all, Chelsea have been wildly inconsistent over the last 10 years.
Yeah, but they're a trophy-picking up club. In the same way as Manchester United. Manchester United, some of the worst teams that they've ever had in the last few years,
yes,
are picking
okay.
up trophies every 2 years. It is an interesting
compared to Manchester United.
Now, one of the ways to do it is by paying billions of, on your squad and so on. Like, I'm not suggesting it's coming from like pure work ethic or anything like that, you know. But there is I suppose when Chelsea are often derided, they're still finding ways of, you know, they won the Champions League a couple of years ago, you know.
And they still managed to creep into the top five this season.
Yes.
I do wonder if the derision is actually muscle memory from a couple of chaotic years under Todd Boehly. And then actually you look at the squad and you're like, hold on a minute, this is the youngest average age of a starting 11 in Premier League history.
And
they've managed to sneak their way into the top five.
And it's as settled a team as you would expect, as you would ever get from Chelsea. Like, you expect, I know the Conference League has been the outlier in that until tonight, but generally you would expect the same 14 lads to be picked in that first 11.
Yeah.
In the Premier League.
Yeah, if everybody's fit, you know.
Yeah. I do think they've got the credit, and I think like people have certainly been appreciative of it, and it's not just the players. Like, picking up Conte and then him going and winning a Premier League is kind of a Conte thing to do, as we've seen last week as well in terms of what he's done with Napoli and some of the money they've spent. But it is interesting, like, the comparison with United, who've obviously thrown a lot of money at a problem as well down through the years, including throwing money at potential managers. It just has never led to the high moments. Like, Chelsea's ceiling is just way higher than anything United have shown over the last 10 years. So there is that. There's a text in about the Arsenal transfer story that you had there.
Yeah.
Why are Arsenal signing a holding midfielder when a striker is needed? And they let Manchester United sign Cunha. Maybe Thomas Partey's on the way out and they're preempting that. It's very early in the transfer window as well. Yeah. At the end of the transfer market, if Zubimendi is the only piece of business that Arsenal have done, I think there might be...
This is a player that they've been after for quite a while and have had a bit of competition for, and, you know, this is business to wrap up early if you want it. It's a brilliant move from Arsenal if it is the player that they want. You know what I mean? You're going to spend, it's like, you wrap that up as early as you can. Don't let a bidding war, don't let Liverpool decide they're back interested, etc. You know, so I can't see how Arsenal fans are complaining about it.
No, I not at this point. Like, as long as they get that centre forward, I think they'll be in a much better position going into the start of next year. Great news about Robbie Brady as well, by the way. Still the Republic of Ireland's first choice left back, you'd have to say, for the foreseeable until somebody comes true. The tennis is next, Oisin.
Yeah, I suppose the highlights of the French Open today, on Emma Raducanu, who's out of the competition. The British tennis number two was convincingly beaten in straight sets by defending champion Iga Świątek in the second round. Two-time finalist Casper Ruud is out of the competition as well at the second round stage, his earliest exit since 2018. The day needed treatment for a leg injury after the third set at 2-1 down before losing in four sets to Nuno Borges from Portugal. Finally, men's second seed Carlos Alcaraz is through to round three after beating Hungary's Fabian Morjan.
Owen has been in touch to ask, will John Terry turn up tonight in full gear if Chelsea win? Wouldn't be surprising. Like, it is worthwhile kind of like casting the mind back to that first Champions League that they did win, because that was always the criticism of Chelsea, like that Manchester City-esque, that current PSG-esque conversation about, oh, you've won all the leagues, but you've never been able to do it in Europe. And then they've actually managed to churn out a couple of them since that drought ended, I guess. It's
a very funny
night,
though. I know it's almost cliche to say it at this stage, but I always remember this insanely dramatic match with, like, Drogba basically ending, I know he came back a couple of years later, but supposedly ending his Chelsea career by winning, you know, equalising and then scoring the penalty to win the Champions League, and it's amazing. And then next thing, it's like, you're in the pub watching it. It's like, what's John Terry doing in his gear? You know, it's like, why is he wearing shin pads?
And now it's so normal.
And it's like, is it? Well, how come people have taken that derision and one of the, like, the biggest clowns in world football? That story was, nobody thought that was a good idea. And everyone said, yeah, that's the done thing now. We'll all take that on.
James Maddison last week. Full kit.
I didn't notice James Maddison.
The amount of headlines that lad's been grabbing online the last week is ridiculous. Like, to not even play in the final and to be hogging so much of the coverage is kind of ridiculous. It's an achievement in itself.
James Maddison does seem like the type that would idolise John Terry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's why, maybe it was a specific ode to John Terry when he, like, got kitted off there last Thursday before the final last Wednesday.
Why are you wearing shin pads?
That was just the cherry on the cake, really.
Make it look authentic.
We have time for maybe one more story, Oisin?
Yeah, we'll take a look at the golf one. So Rory McIlroy is going to be skipping the Memorial Tournament this year. Jack Nicklaus has been speaking ahead of the PGA Tour signature event he hosts every year, and he told reporters that Rory had not contacted him about skipping this year's event. It'll be the first time the five-time major winner has missed this event since 2017. The Down native is currently in a media blackout. He hasn't spoken to the press prior to the US PGA Championship at Quail Hollow. And speaking to the media ahead of the $20 million tournament, Nicklaus admitted he didn't expect Rory to miss out.
I was sort of aware of it about the middle of last week. It surprised me, but you know, guys have got schedules and got things they do, and I haven't talked to him for him to tell me why or why not. You know, that's just his call. I made a lot of calls that I had to make when I played, to play or not play, and sometimes it wasn't as popular as people thought it was. But you know, sometimes you have to make those calls. I don't hold anything against Rory for that. He does what he likes to play. I know he likes to play so many in a row. He likes to play the week before a U.S. Open. So that's what he's doing. I really don't have a comment on it. It's very difficult. Very difficult. I mean, I'm a big Rory fan. Always have been, and I'm sure that I'll will remain that way.
Playing the long game. Killing them with niceness. He'll be back next year.
Yeah, no, he probably will. I think it's interesting, though, that you listen to Jack's comments there. I think he's going out of his way not to, you know, sound hurt, but the American media are very much taking it on as like a snub because he didn't call him. Rory McIlroy has 5 minutes in his week to give Jack Nicklaus a ring and say he won't be coming to his tournament. You know, don't see why you necessarily have to treat somebody's tournament as more important than others just because he's a legend of the game. But maybe I'm wrong on that. Maybe he should have done it. But Rory's definitely keeping way quieter than we were ever seen him before over the last couple of months.
Proper media blackout, yeah. Just one last text. Did I just hear someone suggest that Arsenal let Manchester United sign Cunha? Laughing emoji. He obviously wants to go to the bigger club.
Only wants to play once a week next season, I think.
That's it. I mean, who could blame him? Who could blame him? That is this today's news round. We're going to be speaking to Mike Sherry after the break.